I don't know about you guys, but I don't mind the buff. You know?
I like being buff.
I just like to pretend that people's clothes are literally a part of their body and no one ever gets naked.
That, you know what? I would prefer that world so much.
Yeah.
That would be the best. Can we get that going?
You can be a part of this fantasy, Brandon. All you gotta do is step into the magic.
Yeah, every once in a while when I'm in the shower, I'm like, what am I doing in here without my clothes? I'm gonna get wet.
Yes.
Every once in a while that thought crosses my mind. It's probably like once every other month. It's so weird, but that's actual thing that happens inside of my brain.
I think we're ready to start the show. We have enough viewers.
Okay.
All right. Let's kick it.
It's episode 80 of the Insert Credit Podcast. I'm Alex Jaffe, and the video game website I visit most often these days is GameRankings.com.
Oh, GR.C.
Oh, man. I'm Frank Cifaldi, and the video game website I visit most often, the front page of Polygon.com.
FBOPDC.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Tim Rogers, and the video game website I visit most often is... This is going to sound like a cop-out, but I guess it's Twitter, because I follow way too many video game people. But aside from that, it would be, I have Kotaku just open in a tab, and I look at it, and I just go, lol, and then I look away from it.
I'm Brandon Sheffield, and I guess probably the video game website I visit the most often is Moby Games, to look up credits.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I think that's probably the thing that I do the most.
I think it's the destination I go to the most, but...
Yeah.
Well, like, and I do want to clarify that this is not a normal person thing to do. I consider it's a character flaw of mine. But I go to Polygon.com to get mad at the headlines and how bad they are. it's like how, you know, people like to get mad about stuff on the internet. That's where I go to get mad, is Polygon's headlines.
I really wish that I still could remember to go to game websites and find out what's going on, but I don't remember, and as a result, I feel like I'm drifting further and further away from the mainstream video game stuff. It's like, oh man, this new hotly anticipated game's coming out, and I'm like, oh man, I didn't even know that game existed.
Well, you know,
Titanfall.
The thing is, I go
Titanfall,
to
I knew.
I go to video game websites basically every day, and I don't know what's going on. You know, like reporting on what's going on is not. I don't know. Like, they all report on it, but it gets lost among the other crap, so it's really hard to go somewhere and actually find out what's going on.
Yeah, well, lucky for us, this isn't a video game news podcast. This is just a video game podcast.
I feel very fortunate.
Video game news. I think an ideal... one of the ideal formats of a podcast question in this show is, Jaffe, you present us the video game news, and we use you as our video game news anchor, and then we discuss the news we've just heard. I like when you do that with a question.
I'll take that feedback into consideration.
When it's like, so you guys, this week this thing happened, and we're like, what?
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, that is fun when that happens.
I really think that ideally there should be two questions like that every week. I'm just saying. I think that those are entertaining to discuss.
Two.
I'll take that into consideration.
Figure one out during this podcast.
How about we go on to the question I actually put up for this show?
Okay. Just do it, man. Just break it off, man. Twist it off.
Topic. What makes for a good post-mortem discussion?
PMD?
Honesty,
yeah.
And an interesting story. I think one of the problems with postmortems is sometimes, number one, that people are trying to hide some things and they don't want to tell all the truth about stuff. But number two, they don't know where the interesting part of their story is a lot of the time,
yeah.
And so it can sometimes take a third party to draw that out of them.
Not knowing where the interesting part of the story is actually kind of speaks to their being sort of a genuine person in some cases, you know? It's like, oh, that's just a nice person who doesn't try to think about their video game in terms of the hot angles.
Mm-hmm. Co-tangles.
I remember, this is a story about my days in AAA video game development. Brandon, you once asked if Goichi Suda wanted to write a postmortem of No More Heroes.
Oh yeah, I remember this.
And, I remember this too. This is terrible.
I've never told this story, so I'm gonna tell this like in public.
Yeah.
So I presented like Brandon had just emailed me and he's like, hey, why don't you ask Goichi Suda if he wants to do a No More Heroes postmortem? And I was like, And, you know, Suda walks in with, like, a big bag from the Adidas store, and he's just bought, like, a bunch of shoes, and he just sits down at his desk, and he takes his big headphones off, and I'm like, hey, Suda, you know Game Developer Magazine, you know Brandon, right? He's like, heck yeah. And I'm like, Brandon wants to know if you want to write a post-mortem of the game, of No More Heroes, and he's just like, well, what does that mean? And I'm like, oh, it means, and I got an issue of Game Developer Magazine. I'm like, well, you see, you do five things that went right and five things that went wrong, and then he's like, why would I want to talk about things that went wrong? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, a lot of stuff did go wrong, right? I mean, you talk about that, and he's like, I don't want to talk about that. And he's like, what would I say about things that go right? What does it say here in this about this game? And I'm like, well, they're like, we had a good time. It took us a long time to figure this thing out. And he's like, why should other people get my advice for free? Like, why would I do that? But what really bothered him was the whole, why would we talk about what went wrong? We can't show weakness. You know, we're a Japanese company. We can't
show
weakness.
Also, he was mad that I even asked.
Yeah, and then ultimately, upon ruminating over it for about 24 hours, he came back to me and was like, I don't want to do that postmortem thing. And I'm like, oh, I already told Brandon you kind of didn't seem into it. And he's like, well, tell him that I don't want to do it. And then I'm like,
wow.
Okay. And then he's like, wait, actually, don't tell him that. Just don't mention it again. I'm like, okay. And then I did tell Brandon, yeah, he doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to show weakness. So that's why No More Heroes 2 was so great. And why Shadows of the Darned won, what, it won basically, it got like 10 out of 10 from everybody, didn't it?
Right, yeah.
It was just the most beloved video game ever made.
Sure.
I couldn't
and
stop playing.
Killer is Dead. Killer is Dead got like 75 different Game of the Year awards, didn't it? So there you go.
It certainly did. Lauded for generations to come.
How many awards did No More Heroes Cheerleader get? I forget.
Lollipop Chainsaw?
Yeah.
No more Cheeros?
No more Cheeros!
That's, believe it or not, that's actually what I was calling it while it was being made. I was actually calling it No More. I said we should call it No More Cheeros, and Suda's like, that's not funny. And I'm like, oh, come on. It's hilarious. That's not funny. I don't understand why that's the thing. I'm like, come on, man. And I wrote it on the whiteboard. I wrote No More Cheeros. And he's like, it looks like it says Cheerios. And I'm like, it doesn't. He's like, Cheerios, isn't that a cereal in the United Kingdom? And I'm like, it's a cereal in America. And I think they have it in the United Kingdom.
He was just confused because of the word Cheerio. As
okay,
in,
so, yeah, so yeah, the, exactly, story, exactly. The story that Tim just told.
Yeah.
That's what makes a good postmortem.
So what have been some good postmortems that you have heard that you could hold up as examples?
Yeah, I'm trying to think about that right now. I should have the answer to this given how I was editor of a magazine that had at least one of them every month for like 8 years.
They were all terrible.
No, some of them were pretty good. It's kind of hard to remember. I kind of liked Valve's one of Portal, even though they refused to do it in our format. They talked a lot about their process, which for at the time people didn't yet know exactly what it was Valve was doing to get their games to feel so nice and whatever. So that was a good one. And what else was good?
I feel like we ran one once on a game that got canceled on Gama Sutra. I don't remember what it was though.
Yeah, there have been a few of those. We did a pretty okay one. I thought it was going to go a little further, but we did a pretty all right one on Golden Axe Beast Rider, which was a really bad game, and it basically just told the story of how they got resource starved into oblivion, but then the game had to come out, and so that was pretty all right. That one had to be written by a former employee because otherwise it couldn't have gotten done.
Right.
there were some times where we would publish something knowing full well that the publisher was going to be mad, but we would just deal with the consequences of it because we wanted it to be an actual true story. That happened at least a dozen times. Then sometimes we would get some kind of situation where it would be like, yeah, okay, I've written this postmortem and we're ready to go. And then they would come back and be like, oh man, if I publish this, then EA is going to sue me. They have said they will sue me. So I guess we're not going to do this anymore. It was always EA that did that. EA did that 3 times to us.
So the key to a good postmortem is make sure you don't get sued.
Yeah, make sure you don't get sued, and then it's not an EA game.
Next topic.
All right.
If you were on a Chrono Trigger-style time-traveling adventure set in the real world,
yeah,
who would you recruit from across time into your party to save the planet from ancient people?
Oh, oh dang.
The 1979 Chicago Bears were a really solid team.
That's true.
Won the Super Bowl that year. And I feel like their offensive line in particular would protect me. So I'm going to go with them.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the name of this man right now. He was a sniper in the Finnish Winter War.
Nice.
And like he was like basically the best sniper of that era and all through World War One and Two. And at one point he got half of his face shot off by a rival sniper and then kept sniping.
Oh wow.
Even after that. So pictures
of
him.
Guy. That
yeah,
guy.
So that guy, I can't remember what his name is right now.
He just sounds like a great RPG character.
But yeah, I read all about this dude, and he was formerly a hunting farmer guy, mostly hunter, who lived in a remote Finnish village, and it wasn't really even a village. He just lived where there were a couple other cabins nearby, but when the Russians came in, he was like, heck no, and They gave him a gun. He was like, "Yeah, I know how to use this," and then he did it. So that guy.
So can Carl Sagan? Could he have summoned meteors?
Given time, maybe. Maybe if you went 20 years into the future, at which point he'd have mastered that technology.
Okay, then at that point, assuming meteors. I want to go Carl Sagan also because I just kind of want to hang out with Carl Sagan.
Sure.
Yeah, I like that guy.
Yeah.
Tim, who are you drafting into your party?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
William Randolph Hearst, I feel, could influence people really well.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be good at my party.
I want Dostoevsky just so that we can have conversations. Is that all right?
Yeah.
That's why I want Sagan, right? That, like, I tried to figure out a way to make him actually useful in combat, but...
You need a party mascot.
Dostoevsky
is my mascot.
Okay.
Who else would be good? Let's see. I guess I would want a Viking, because Vikings are real tough.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Get Beowulf.
Beowulf? But Beowulf's not necessarily real, is he?
He was probably
Might have been a bit real. Eric the Red seemed pretty tough, but he didn't really care about a lot of dudes, so... He might not help.
Well,
sort of one dude who cares about dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was thinking about Genghis Khan, but he's just gonna have sex with everything.
Oh man, Bruce Lee.
Oh obviously. Yeah.
Jesus Lord, yeah. Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee never publicly displayed his kung fu abilities. He would not take someone on in a real fight.
Well, here's the thing, though. We're talking about the fate of the universe.
Maybe he didn't have practical. He might not have had practical applications of his martial arts.
So I bet he did.
Go one rung up and recruit Ip Man.
Yeah, I think you'd be better off with Ip Man. I think you'd be a lot better off with him.
I'm not sure, though.
Because there are historical records of him beating dudes up.
No, that's true. Like,
and he ran a school, which means it's... I don't know, man. I don't know. I've seen that movie.
The new army.
Man, you know what? I would take the both of them and then just prove it once and for all.
Yeah, and then kick out the one who doesn't win. I'm pretty sure Ip Man was hard.
He's going to win that fight, yeah. How about... Sure he...
I'm going to go with Calamity Jane also in mine. For variety, I want a female in my party.
Yeah.
And I just think she'd look cool in a lineup with the Chicago Bears from 1979 and Carl Sagan and William Randolph Hearst.
Now, which of the Chicago Bears from 1979 would be her love interest?
Oh, I don't actually know any of their names.
Okay.
Captain McBear.
How about some questionably magic guys like an Aleister Crowley?
Oh yeah, I would definitely take Crowley. I would take Merlin. I would also take if we're talking about divine powers, I'm gonna take Joan of Arc.
Moses.
Moses, I can take or leave.
You got the plagues.
Whatevs. Moses isn't real.
All right, fine. Moses isn't real.
Moses could have been real.
He could have been real.
Who knows? Who knows how real Moses was? Yeah, I would pick a bunch of people who were sort of practical. I guess. I mean, I have. Oh God, I just have like way too many that are in my head at the moment. As soon as you ask the question,
shoot some of them at.
Yeah, you haven't said any yet. Come on.
Yeah,
I want to try and. I think this is a cool question, so I'm trying to make sure my answer is the best.
Keep in mind we don't have a whole lot of time.
Yeah, we got about 40 seconds left.
Oh, 40 seconds, huh?
Do it.
Yeah, 35.
Man, yeah. Well, let's just go ahead and say no. I guess I can't. I guess I'm not going to think of a really good one.
That's too bad.
I was just, yeah. I mean.
Hey, tell you what, Tim, I'm going to give you a special dispensation. If you think of somebody later in the show, you can just go ahead and shout it out.
Oh, how about at the end of the show, I will present a 7-person party that is perfect.
Oh, that's exciting. We have that to look forward to.
I'm just going to say one more, which is my great-grandfather, who was a World War I fighter pilot ace, and I feel like he's going to be real invested in me staying alive.
And he plans
real well.
I like that pick. It's very personal. It adds drama to the party.
Personal and practical.
Yes.
And for similar lineup reasons to Calamity Jane, I'm going to put Jimi Hendrix in my party.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, Jimothy.
Hang on, I've got a package.
Okay.
Okay.
Is he talking about his penis when he says that?
He is talking about his genitals, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Topic number 3. What would you consider your largest critical blind spot?
And to be clear, was that in games or in general?
In games, in assessing games.
Okay.
Like, what do you tend to overlook?
That's tough.
Unless the music's really bad, I'm pretty easy on music. Because in most of the games I play anyway, the music's just kind of incidental. And if it doesn't stand out, I don't notice.
So, I think that I'm not as critical as I could be of level design if the action is swift and fluid. So like if things are real responsive, it will take me it'll take me longer to figure out that there's no level design here sometimes. So that's kind of one.
It doesn't have to be things that you're that you think you could devote effort to more. It could just be stuff that matters to a lot of people that doesn't matter that much to you.
Wouldn't it be the app?
Well, that's how I answered it.
Right.
Like the score doesn't tend to matter to me too much unless it's just, you know, stand out bad.
Yeah. Well, meanwhile, I know people who will play awful games just because they love the composer.
I think while I'm making games, I can sometimes get it in my idea in my head that an idea is good, even though I have very little evidence to prove that it is a good idea, and then I show it to people and I realize that as much as I liked it, nobody understood it. So that's different since it's while making them, but that's most prominent in my mind right now.
That's the opposite of a blind spot. That's seeing something that may not be there.
Okay, in old games where you jump, I'm pretty blind to bad jumping sometimes because I guess I just played so many, you know, 8-bit games that had bad jumping that I have a hard time thinking of some jumps as bad as opposed to just thinking that's how the jump is in this game.
That's interesting. That's the opposite of the first one I said.
Yeah, that's true.
Because if the jumps are good, then I'll sometimes ignore bad level design for a while. So, yeah. Cool. We should combine.
Yeah. we'll be the best critic.
360 degree vision.
What else?
I tell you one blind spot that I don't have is bad localization.
Yeah.
That biz drives me up a wall.
When has bad localization ruined a game for you?
Every time I've played a Japanese game in the last 20 years. No, that's not true. But it's every time I play an Atlus game, it doesn't ruin it for me, but it definitely takes the experience down a notch when there's like there's a professor saying anyways that it's like maybe don't do that, I guess.
So many words bother me
yeah
in games. For example, towards, forwards, yes. Backwards. Yeah. Those aren't even real words. Forward, toward, backward. You don't put an S on the end of them.
They
seriously.
Do in the UK, though.
Oh, well, stupid people in the UK do. Smart people don't.
Yeah, like maths? Come on. Come on.
No smart person puts an S on the end of the word backward.
Yeah. Those people smart are eating too many Cheerios.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Cheerio.
Legos.
Legos.
Tim, do you have any critical blind spots, or is your vision immaculate?
Well, I don't know. I've kind
As
of
he
constructed
his glasses.
My.
Lol.
I've kind of constructed my whole thing around kind of looking at everything and caring about everything. So, I don't know. I think it is true that in the past I have and I mean this is just how I assess games. Like what I've determined is a good game. Kind of the old Japanese games kind of appeal to me more. And just whatever my sensibility, my unchangeable sensibility might be, I'm sure that it was the old Japanese action games that informed that, so that maybe when a game is from Japan and it's old, I'm more likely to like it and I'm more likely to want to compare newer things to it and base what I consider to be a good feeling in a game around that. So I don't know if it's a blind spot or a like a hyper acute spot. But it's when I'm playing a game that doesn't have a little bit of slide, you know, a little bit of slipperiness, a little bit of friction, a little bit of toughness or hardness, then I am able to not like it as much.
Are there elements of video games you've transcended beyond caring about?
I guess I like, and I'm sort of able to defend. Any Dragon Quest game. I think those are all really... I mean, there's a whole lot of BS in those games, but I don't even bother talking about it.
Hey,
because I just like the idea of it so much.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because my next topic is about Dragon Quest.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like those games a lot. They're some of my faves.
Right. I can take a break.
Sure. So Akira Toriyama does the character design for Dragon Quest.
That's true.
Dragon Ball, Dr. Slump fame, Akira Toriyama. But he doesn't do much else. If Akira Toriyama got more involved in production of the series, what would the next Dragon Quest game be like?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, he would probably want to write the story. I mean, assuming he still wants to write stories, which apparently he doesn't. But he would probably write the story, is what I'm guessing. And if he were some sort of director of it, I mean, if he were going at it being the actual director of the game, he'd probably want to make it look even more like one of his comics, which the current games don't. It's like Dragon Quest X looks pretty cool. right? The characters look pretty cool, but it's like, why can't the landscapes look like Akira Toriyama landscapes? Doesn't that bother him? Does he have so much money that he doesn't bother looking at the games? I don't know. It's just, I think it would be cool if we had these cool, weird, cel-shaded landscapes instead of the weird, blurry, pixely stuff that we still have. I'm going to link one in the chat so that you guys can see what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. I just linked it. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of this blurry. It's like, why not make it look as cool as the characters? I don't know. That's my thing. I guess because that's a different sort of deal.
Yeah, like what with that Ni No Kuni, they kind of made a game that looks like it was supposed to look like.
Yeah, kind of. That game sure is pretty boring, though.
I know.
Yeah. It's a little. I don't know if you've played it, Brandon. It's just not.
Well, I basically watched a person play it, and that helped me determine that I did not really particularly need to play it myself.
Yeah, I feel like I watched a person play it. That person just happened to be me.
Right.
So that's exactly what it felt like. The battle.
I appreciate the
really
giant book it came with, though.
That was the Japanese DS version.
Yeah. Is it the only one?
Yeah, that the Japanese DS version came with the book. The other versions did not. The book was such a good idea. And then I have the book, if you ever want to look at it. It's not that good. It's just a big dumb instruction manual. It's like not even. It's like it was supposed to be some weird Studio Ghibli film artifact thing, but it's just a big dumb hardback instruction manual.
No, that's disappointing. The commercials made it look like it had so much promise.
Yeah, it has so much promise of dumbness.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I think Akira Toriyama would be cool if he were to make a game, because he wrote some really cool stories, you know, in his Dragon Ball.
Yeah, weren't we talking about this last time, how he would be a good dude to make a video game?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I believe we were.
I think we've mentioned it in passing before.
He can really construct a narrative in a compelling way, I think. And it took me a really long time to know that because of how many people there were in my high school just drawing Dragon Ball Z in their notebook, just drawing Goku and basically looking about the same as real Goku, and I was like, man, this is obviously garbage.
Here is a literal thought that I had when I was in sixth grade. I am not embellishing. I was just thinking about Dragon Ball Z, and I was talking about it with a friend of mine, and here is what I thought word for word. If there is ever a point in my life where I just don't like Dragon Ball Z anymore, I won't even know who I am. And that came true. I didn't. There was a point where I didn't like it that much anymore, and I don't really know who I am.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's really sad, too.
Yeah, too bad. You gotta figure that out.
Oh, someday, Brandon.
I think it would be cool if they let if Akira Toriyama were to be in charge of Dragon Quest, they would make. So I mean, they've already gone and made a portable, multiplayer-heavy Dragon Quest. Quest 9.
Did anybody like that, by the way?
Yes. I liked it for a little bit, and then eventually when I got to the end of it, and it's like, it's over, and now you get to enjoy the infinite Diablo-like quests. And then me and Stabo once played it for like literally 16 straight hours, multiplayer, and it was actually really fun. But it's like, we would need to get two more people in here and jerk around with this if we want to have more fun with it. And it's like, I thought it would be cool if it was online, and then they made a massively multiplayer online game, Dragon Quest X, which I will probably never play. I think the next thing they could do, because they seem to be doing a lot of things to make their fans mad, the next thing they could do would be an episodic game. So Dragon Quest XI could be episodes, but that would actually be the best
that would
thing.
I don't think that would make anyone
would
too mad.
Would every episode start with a recap of the last episode and end with a preview of the next episode?
Heck yeah, why the heck not? I actually think the Japanese fans would be really mad. because to them, they get really mad whenever a Dragon Quest game is not announced as being a new game on the newest system in the highest quality of graphics with guaranteed like 80 hours, single player, one game. That's all they want.
Yeah, they want that single player.
Yeah, when they announced that Dragon Quest IX was a DS game, people were just infuriated. They announced it was an action game for the DS, and people were infuriated. And then they were like, "Well, okay, now we're gonna make it turn based for you guys because that's what you wanted." And then they were like, "Well, we're still mad because it's got downloadable. It was all about the DLC." So I bet they would make it for the Wii U, and it's got DLC episodes. But they won't make it for the Wii U because the Wii U is not selling well enough. So I bet Dragon Quest XI will be for the 3DS.
Yeah, 3DS seems like the way to go.
More like 3D suck.
I'm making a game for the Wii U right now.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. That's weird. It is really weird. And so I asked him why. Why are you making a game for the Wii U? And he's like, "Oh, you know, I like Nintendo." And that's the only answer.
That's the only answer I've ever heard for anyone.
It's the only answer I have ever heard. And actually, I will be in my article that I'm writing that's going to go up in a little while on Gama Sutra, I'm going to be revealing some numbers for probably the first time, not on Wii U, but on 3DS eShop, of what a few developers and publishers have actually made and what they've told me is possible to make, and so that'll be real fun for Nintendo to read, because Nintendo knows already, but the rest of the world didn't know.
Keep your eyes on that. Next
so
topic.
So, Jaffe, whatever it is you're doing, we can hear it, scraping and stuff.
Yeah, you got those ghosts in there again.
All right, I'm busting those ghosts. Rest in peace, Harold Ramis.
Yeah, bust those.
I ain't afraid of none of them.
All right. What game or games first convinced you to take smartphones seriously?
Ooh.
Like Fights Nuns.
Well, I played that Cannibalt on the Flash, and I was like, this is a cool game. It's got really good feelings to it, and it has a nice atmosphere. And then they're like, that was the day that the iOS version came out. I hadn't played it on the... forgive me, I had not played the Flash version before the iOS version came out. And then I played the Flash version and the iOS version in the same day. And that was actually the first game I bought for my iPhone. And I was like, this is cool. I bought it when it was $3. I was like, heck yeah.
It's also my first game on the iPhone. I don't remember what I paid for it, but it's also the first, I don't know, to me it's like the first smartphone game, you know, that felt like it could only exist on a smartphone. Even though, yeah, there was a Flash version. Yeah, you can make it a one-button game with any button you want. It just doesn't feel right unless I'm touching. Like, I feel like I need to touch it.
I'm having a hard time thinking of the answer here. But I never owned an iPhone and still do not own an iPhone. So it was a little later for me. I have this iPad here, and I'm looking at it, and I'm trying to see
iPad.
But I had an iPod Touch before that.
Oh, an IPT.
That the first game I played on there significantly was Xenonia, which is a Korean RPG that uses action RPG that uses like a fake D-pad and buttons, and so I guess I shouldn't say that was the game that made me take it seriously, because that was a game that didn't belong on there that I just played a lot.
Xenonia.
So for me, it was probably later things like Zaga 33 or Ridiculous Fishing or stuff that made me feel like, yeah, okay, there's stuff that you can only make on here that's good. It for me, I guess it was kind of a slow burn with this stuff, and for a long time I just didn't have anything because I didn't have the platform with which to experiment. By the time I got there, it was mostly done.
I don't believe that you didn't consider smartphones like an important platform for games until Ridiculous Fishing. I can't believe that.
Oh yeah, no, okay. I don't think that.
I don't mean business wise. I mean creatively.
Yeah, no, I don't think that I. I guess I remember a time when I thought that it was not a real thing, and it's like, oh, here comes another guy going to make iOS games.
Yeah.
But I think that that time stopped before I got a device that could do it.
I remember actively in the double aughts being a cartoon character in some kind of period piece set in 2006. One of those guys who reads a newspaper and says, games on phones, that'll never work.
I just played a bunch of games on the phones, and I was like, well, hey, they're all really cool. You know, there's why not, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when the Nintendo came out, and my dad's like, what's the deal with that? They already made video games on god darn Atari, you know? why are they still making more of them? I mean, I remember my dad being like that when me and my brother wanted a Nintendo for Christmas. And it's like, I just hadn't really thought of phone games. I don't know. Remember we went to Tokyo Game Show a bunch of times, you and me, Brandon, remember? And
yeah,
every time there was some big old booth that was all full of phone games. It was like some FOMA games for Docomo and whatever. And the booth just kept getting bigger and bigger because people were just emptying buckets of money into the whole idea of having a game on your phone, turning every phone into a game console. And I remember us being cynical about it and Christian Nutt being cynical about it. And we're just all like, why does this booth keep getting bigger? And then, I played Cannonball on my iPhone and I was like, hey, I like this. You know, I don't even care that it's a tiny little multivitamin of a game, that it's not even like a, you know, a full course meal or whatever Hideo Kojima would call Metal Gear. You know, it's like, I'm having a good time here and I don't see why this isn't a great idea. You know?
I think it's possible that it started for me in the feature phone days when that game Nom came out from Gameville, and I really thought that it was a cool idea, and I was really into the idea of one-button games and stuff. And I think that kind of got me on board, and Sword and Sorcery was one of those where it didn't excel as a game, but it excelled as an experience, and that was cool.
Yeah, I had an experience with that one. I liked that game.
Yeah.
I think my favorite games, too, but I mean, I guess it's not a game to a lot of people.
Right.
I still remember how people would hound, well, both of us, but mostly you, Brandon, when we'd be at GDC or something, one of us would, in a talk or something, mention mobile games, and it's like every mobile game company in the joint would just swarm you. It's just like, oh, these guys.
Yeah.
Because like no one would take them seriously.
Nobody wanted to talk to them. So if you had any vague interest, it was like, well, guess we're talking to you forever now.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember Brandon always being excited about portable game consoles.
Yes.
Just always like the NGP, not the NGP, what was it called?
GP32 and the GP2X and all that garbage.
Yeah.
I was really excited when the PlayStation 2 had that little add-on you could put on it, that it was a screen you could attach right to the console. It's like, that's it, you don't need a TV anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the end of
TV. I remember that being a cool thing.
And I haven't had a TV since.
But I mean, who actually bought one of those, though? Kind of weird people, right?
Yeah.
So,
playing this gravity hook on my phone right now.
Adam
Saltzman, if you're listening, can you, why not optimize it for iPhone 5, please? You know, it would be nice to have a little extra real estate, just saying, you know.
Every so often at podcast@insertcredit.com, I get a little comment which accuses me of using this format of asking you guys questions to handle my own issues and hash out things that pertain specifically to me.
That's good, though.
Not making any bones about it. This next question is specifically because I have a problem and you guys are the only ones who can solve it.
Nice.
So I'm putting together this arcade museum. I don't think I've mentioned this before.
Okay.
I've made a few attempts. They've gone sour before now. I've got a few games to start out, and they have to fit a specific theme. I'll tell you what I'm starting out with. Maybe I'll add some more as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell me if you come up with any games that you can bring along that will fit with it. My first three games are Bomberman,
mm-hmm.
Tomb Raider, and Virtua Tennis.
It's Bomberman, Tomb Raider, and Virtua Tennis. What's the theme?
Well, you can't just ask me, man.
Bomberman. Well, see, I was going to think it was games that have OMB in the name.
Yeah, I was as well, but not anymore.
Bomberman, Virtua Tennis.
Tomb Raider.
The original Tomb Raider?
Tomb Raider.
Is it the original Tomb Raider, or is it the remake titled Tomb Raider that just came out this year?
The original Tomb Raider.
Not both of them.
Could I bring the original Mario Brothers?
No.
Could I bring Bomberman 2?
No.
Okay.
Could I bring... Wait, no.
So,
could I bring Virtua Fighter 2?
Sorry, what was that?
Virtua Fighter 2?
No.
Could I donate Ms. Pac-Man?
No.
How about Pac-Man?
No.
Dang.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give the listeners at home a little bit more time to ruminate before dropping the next game that I have here.
If Bomberman were not there, could we swap Bomberman 2 for Bomberman?
No.
Okay.
Specifically, Bomberman can be there, but Bomberman 2 cannot.
Got it.
All right. Another game that I'm bringing is NCAA Football 2004.
NCAA Football 2004.
Yes.
Oh, God. Bomberman, Tomb Raider.
Virtua Tennis.
Virtua Tennis. Virtua Tennis 1? Virtua Tennis 2?
Virtua Tennis.
What about the European version, Power Smash?
No.
Okay. Just checking.
2004.
Yeah. What about... Altered Beast.
Altered Beast. That is a good one, but no.
Alt B. Okay. What about Bomberman, Tomb Raider? What about Crash Bandicoot?
I would not let you bring Crash Bandicoot, but here's a hint. I would let you bring Crash Nitro Kart.
Crash Nitro Kart. Okay.
Well, that's confusing.
I like Crash Nitro Kart.
And here's another game I'll let you bring.
How about Jack X Combat Racing for PlayStation 2?
Jack X Combat? No, absolutely not.
Oh, God damn.
Okay, next game.
The next game is The King of Fighters Extreme.
Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
On GBA, yeah?
Mm.
Well, that's what it came out for.
Mm.
As far as I recall.
Mm.
Are you talking about that? Let me give it a look.
Mm.
KOFX, Virtual Tennis.
Oh, it was on Goddarn N-Gage.
Oh, no.
King of Fighters
okay.
Extreme.
Can I bring Pandemic?
Yes, you can bring Pandemic. No, you can't bring Pandemic.
Why not?
Oh, man, he just burned you.
I almost had it. Could I bring... Spider-Man?
Not
Which
Spider-Man,
no.
Not Spider-Man.
What about Activision's Spider-Man 2?
Yes, you can bring Activision's Spider-Man 2.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Well,
for the PlayStation, that is.
Mm.
I want to bring Pocket Kingdom.
Pocket Kingdom. Yes, you can bring Pocket Kingdom.
For the N-Gage?
Yeah. Yeah.
N-Gage, huh? The N-Gage, huh?
All right, you guys have already gotten it. It's all games which were released for the N-Gage.
Yep. Yeah. I sure did.
Congratulations, you actually beat it for the first time.
I did this one. I did it.
Yeah,
I did
you
it.
Did it, Brandon. You won.
King of Fighters Extreme. Man, Virtua Tennis for the N-Gage.
Yeah. If you didn't get that one, the next giveaway would have been Pathway to Glory, which was their big exclusive.
Oh, BWTG. Yeah, they're...
That was supposed to be their killer app. So, Blaine, If you could pump in some victory music for Brandon right here, that would be really nice.
Yeah, I'm the best guy. I have all of his games on my Engage.
All right. Here's a question from Vincent Toops. Cool guy.
Oh, VToop.
Yeah. He says, design a non-violent video game using the Doom IP.
Doom IP.
So how are we going to define non-violent?
You don't kill anybody. You don't shoot anybody.
So you're just you're building a fortress? Wait, but then if the... You're building a Mars base?
Yeah, I kind of want to
do something where you're like... I mean, I guess violence could happen to you, maybe. No.
Yeah, violence can happen to you, I asked you.
As I was thinking it might be fun to be a caco demon.
Mm-hmm.
Just floating around and, I don't know, trying to pick up groceries for your kids or something. There's a man with a giant railgun with a BFG who's shooting at you, and you're just like, man, I'm just trying to get some groceries for my kids. I don't know if that's fun, but that was the first thing that came to mind.
The first thing that came to my mind was you play as one of those screaming faces on the wall texture, and it's kind of like a social simulator where you kind of have to become the leader of your clique of screaming faces and maybe date some other screaming faces.
Wait, I've got one that I think I would enjoy playing, or somebody would, because I'm not very good at stealthy things, but it would be really cool to be like the guy that's hiding all the secrets. You're actively hiding all the secret, making hiding stuff in the walls and rerouting things to try to fool Doom Guy. And the fewer secrets he gets, the better you're doing.
Yeah, I was thinking like my game would be like whoever it is that placed all the power ups and stuff everywhere just randomly was like, I think some ammo goes right here. Mm-hmm. Who's that guy?
Yeah.
Why is he doing that? So that's what I was thinking.
Is he a hero or a menace?
Yeah,
I was
exactly.
thinking it could just be like once the game is over and you've saved everybody, it's just you're like the janitor just cleaning the place up. That could probably be pretty all right.
Somebody's got to drain these toxic acid tanks.
You're driving a bulldozer around and you're just pushing everybody. So, everywhere.
Isn't there intense looking first person janitor game that I saw recently?
Oh yeah, I did see that.
So you know how in Doom 3 you have to switch between using a flashlight and a gun?
Yeah.
What if you didn't have the gun?
And you just have to switch between using the flashlight and not using the flashlight?
Yes, that's my idea.
I actually was in the process of making a video game like that in Poland with some folks when we were doing a little game jam. It was kind of Little Red Riding Hood themed just because that's easy. And there were wolves approaching you from all angles. And any wolf that you had in your flashlight beam would stop, but none of the other wolves would.
Oh, boy.
And so you basically have to... You're constantly, like, backing away from things. Also, it was for the Oculus Rift, and your battery was like a hand crank. Your flashlight was one of those hand crank flashlights, and so you would have to look down at your flashlight to crank it up. So it was all that risk-rewardy stuff, what with the flashlight, and you would just eventually get eaten by a wolf, but you would try to survive as long as possible.
Wow. That's intense.
Should finish making that game. That was kind of fun.
Maybe make it a Doom game.
Should make it a Doom game is what I should do.
Yeah, you could get that IP.
Yeah, I could get that.
John, put it on the N-Gage.
Put it on the N-Gage. Why the heck not?
Tim?
Hey, there he is.
Hey, what's up?
What Doom games would you make without any violence?
The janitor one.
The janitor one's probably okay. But then again, yeah, there is somebody making some sort of like horrendously boring looking game. I think, I don't know, making a game that's like about designing a Doom level, because Doom levels are so nuts. They're just so weird. Yeah. But then again, you know, that's not really non-violent. It's like maybe you're just... building tunnels. You're just digging tunnels, and you're just building rooms.
Hell Builder.
So it's like Minecraft in hell?
Yeah. Hellcraft.
Maybe, you know, because you're trying to find stuff, you know? Or, I mean, they have that base on Mars where they're trying to do something there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you'd have to read the books and experience the extended universe to understand what it is they're doing, but...
Yeah, it could be set in the base on Mars in just, like, a regular day where hell hasn't opened up.
Yeah, it would just be like a regular day before that happens.
Right.
And then at the very, like, at the end, it's just like, yeah.
I mean, maybe it's a regular day there, and you're, like, a courier, and you got to go through all these weird, because those tunnels and seekers and stuff existed on Mars before hell opened up for some reason.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. You're a courier having to deliver packages between, like, Mars-based personnel and having to navigate these weird passages.
Yeah. And you find out the sinister secret as to why they are there.
Call it Doom Courier. That's pretty good.
I still want to play my game, courier, so I'm going to stick with
Doom.
That.
Yeah. Courier of Doom is the name of it.
Courier of Doom, don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah, you have a couple of minutes to, yeah, just really tight time limits, just running around, and you gotta just learn your way around this massive, huge labyrinthine.
Yeah, what yeah, it's like Crazy Taxi on foot in Doom.
Huh.
Yeah,
I like that. And
there's no mini map, no navigations. No. It's all just learn where stuff is and then take on missions.
Some elements of this topic weave themselves into this next topic. How Ooh. May one better themselves as a level designer?
Oh, God.
Make a bunch of levels. That's the main yeah. way. But also play a bunch of levels that are good and try to figure out why. But I guess like trying to make an interesting Doom level is probably a pretty good exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're pretty complicated. They can get labyrinthine, and they move around and do all... I mean, they cross themselves and stuff like that, so I guess that's pretty good way.
Well, play bad games, too.
Yeah.
Play poorly designed games and figure out why they're bad is probably the best thing you can do.
Well, I don't know if it's the best, because it doesn't teach you how to do it well. So, but it's one of the good things you can do. I mean, yeah, play a bunch of WayForward games and think about how much cooler they would be if they had level design.
Yeah. Play a bunch of bad ones. Play a bunch of baddens. And
play that Baddin 2003.
Yeah.
Baddin 2004.
Right. Yep. Y'all got that.
Play some real gross ones, I would say.
So what's the master class of level design?
The master class?
Yeah.
Well,
or what's the master curriculum of level?
I mean, you want to see some level. What? Go for it.
I was going to say probably like Super Mario Brothers 3 and Doom would be like Doom would be 101 and Mario would be 102 and then you'd have some other stuff.
I would say that the very first dungeon from the new Zelda game 3DS is a very good example of action game level design that is sort of exploration based, but sort of not. If you want to talk 3D level design, the original Metroid Prime is one of the best things on earth to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to talk about multiplayer game level design, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 has really, really solid multiplayer maps that are kind of amazing when you figure they're designed for large groups of people to be in them. I mean, there's a lot of different types of level design, but you could write a whole... I mean, I think the junction point of all of that is that new Zelda.
I thought you were going to say Warren Spector's video game.
No, let's not even give that guy credit for that phrase, okay?
Yeah.
It's actually a group of words that can be used to discuss things.
Oh, I am aware.
If you're going to make a name of a video game company, try thinking of something. Action Button Entertainment. That's a good, strong name.
It's an American name.
It has the word good, butt
good,
in it.
Good, strong American name. I mean, there's a lot of games that have... I mean, so you start talking about level design, and level design is what happens in a level. It's how it happens. It's where it happens. It's the pacing of things happening. It's when stuff kind of, you know, because you have slack points and you have choke points and you have bottlenecks. If you play Uncharted 2, kind of the middle section of Uncharted 2 has what I would call really good level design for an action game. I mean, it's still AAA and it's roller coastery. BioShock Infinite has what I would call basically you can just put together a real big list of common level design mistakes from BioShock Infinite because it's just got these big slabs of places that are just kind of slopped out there, and they try to be intricate and they try to have little weird contests going on multiple layers and all that, but yeah, man, that new Zelda, that first dungeon of that new Zelda, it'll take you a half an hour from start till the end of that dungeon. That should just go ahead and show you. I mean, you could write a whole goddamn textbook about that dungeon.
Maybe I will.
Heck yeah. And Super Mario 64 is pretty good as well as far as 3D game level design goes. The very first Tomb Raider, I think, had some good, what I would call traditional level designs that worked in 3D. It was more of the pace of an adventure game. Yeah,
really,
I care
a whole lot of Zelda dungeons, not just the new one, right?
Well, no, not just the new one, but if you're looking for an absolutely perfect example of super well-paced and understandable and enjoyable and breezy level design, I would say the very beginning of the new Zelda straight up through till the end of the first dungeon is a really good sample, a really good taster. I mean, it's got everything that was ever good. Everything that was ever good about Zelda level design is just all there.
Oh, I thought you were just going to stop it at everything that was ever good.
No. Everything that was ever good, that's...
doesn't have pizza in it. So.
Yeah, there's no pizza in there.
It ain't got no pizza.
They don't have no pizza. I don't want to eatza. Super Mario Bros. 3 also, just every single level is this. The levels, somebody recently was telling me, oh, I played Super Mario Bros. 3 recently. I hadn't played it for a while. And the levels are all just so short, man. They're just like, you know, just so short. It's like, yeah, they're short, you know. And then somebody else might have a complaint if they go to a, you know, fine dining restaurant and there's like, oh, there's not that much food, man. You know, it's like it's the same thing. I hate to compare Super Mario Bros. 3 to fine dining, but there it is. Some of those levels are really small, and it's just everything is masterfully placed, and they're all interesting. Every single level in that game, and there are like 90 levels.
It doesn't waste your time.
Yeah, every single level has something different. There's not a single level that doesn't do something different involving, it could just be the placement of an element or two, but I would study that game a whole bunch, and I would study Metroid Prime, and I guess Nintendo. Metroid Prime 1, Zelda, A Link Between Worlds. I mean, go ahead and play the whole thing, it's pretty good. And Super Mario Bros. 3. Is a pretty good place to get started. And then you have to play something bad. You know, you've got to play something with bad level design.
What's your example?
God, I don't know.
A game with bad?
I think a couple... Man, I don't want to... I don't know. I mean, there's just too many of them. I mean... I guess, like, the first Doom is not really bad level design, but it's just, like, it's really huge and really busy, and it's just get a key and unlock this door. And people always, they link, there's this handy image that kids link on in forum comments all the time where it's, like, FPS level design in 1993 was like this, and in 2012 it's like this, and it's, like, the 2012 one is just, like, a straight line. You guys have probably seen that.
I have seen it.
That is the truth, but I'm not saying that the straight line is better or worse. I'm just saying that the 1993 huge giant jumble of stuff to get lost in wasn't exactly the best thing.
Nope. Yeah.
Wasn't exactly the best thing.
I don't like getting lost, and I don't like ever having to check a map. And in those days, of course, there wasn't even the option to check a map, and I would get lost a lot.
Yeah, it was just get lost and scream a lot. I remember playing the game The Bard's Tale on PC, and that's...
Or like
that's
The Nard's Tale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more like The Tard's Bale.
Mm-hmm. All right, so...
That was a lot of getting lost.
Super Mario Brothers 3, we got Doom, we got Link Between Worlds, Metroid Prime, Super Mario 64, just Nintendo in general.
And then you want to play Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 for the multiplayer.
All right.
Probably Titanfall. I haven't played enough Titanfall, but I'm pretty sure Titanfall is some of the best level design that's ever been made for a game, just based on what I've seen. I've obsessively watched a lot of videos of it.
They got stuff in there.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's like the best stuff. And then the last thing you want to do is just go ahead and play Ms. Pac-Man a whole bunch.
I've got a news item topic for you.
So you learn that level design is also just in the emergent situations that happen when you have a couple of different enemies with different behaviors, and then Ms. Pac-Man is just, it's really enlightening for that. And Pac-Man Championship Edition. The end.
All right. The video game world shook when Sonic the Hedgehog was recently redesigned to be wearing a scarf.
Yeah.
What item of clothing or accessory would you add to the redesign of a video game character?
Oh, baby. I would put a bow in Pac-Man's head.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would.
That's funny because I was gonna say eyeliner on Ms. Pac-Man. That's what I would do.
I would give Ratchet from Ratchet and Clank big bushy eyebrows.
Oh! I would give Jack from the original Jack and Daxter a tiny little disgusting
goatee.
Horrible, gross looking goatee.
That is a good idea.
Let's see. What do game characters even look like now? Like, are there game characters? Or are they just dudes now?
They're just
character creators. So
they all look
like
Nathan Drake.
It's what sliders would we put in our character creator?
Right.
I want to have a Cro-Magnon brow.
Oh, yeah.
I would, kind of a serious answer. If I were to, for some reason, doing like a new Alan Wake, I'd make him kind of chubby. I'd make him a chubby writer. You know, I'd make him look like a normal dude with like a sweater and a bit of a gut. That's what I'd do. Cause like he's a little too sexy to just be some writer who stumbles into adventure. He should just be kind of, you know, he shouldn't look like someone who takes care of himself. He should look like someone who, you know, has a whopper once in a while. Yeah. So that's what I would do. Lester the Unlikely, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would give Lester the Unlikely a fedora.
Well, yeah. Modern Lester the Unlikely should have a fedora. I'm into that. Okay.
What about modern leisure suit Larry? What's the equivalent of a leisure suit?
Probably one of those button-up short-sleeve shirts that's black and has, like, flames on it.
Oh, Guy Fieri Larry.
Yeah.
Guy Fieri Larry. Wow.
I would give Sonic the Hedgehog iced tips.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
That'd be a good one.
Sunglasses on the back of the head.
Yeah. I can't think of, like, so many of the games that I'm thinking of, there's really nothing that you need to add to them.
Yeah.
I guess it might be fun to do something to one of the Belmonts, but I don't know what. They're just all muscle shirty.
Yeah, and they're pretty, I don't know, uninteresting characters to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, maybe Alucard. Alucard's really the one iconic guy.
I would give Simon Belmont a bunch of tattoos. Just make him, like, Yakuza-style tattooed up. Like, he's been training for this his entire life. And train Yul Payne or to not feel pain and stuff. And so he's just got these giant. He's a demon killer, and he's got demons on his back all the time in tattoo form.
I would make Dracula look like a Frankenstein monster, and just pretend that Dracula was some kind of mistranslation and was Frankenstein the whole time.
Nice.
I would in these modern these Batman games, I would make Harley Quinn less embarrassingly gross as far as like her sexy outfit.
Yeah.
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 Paul Dini.
That's a good idea.
I would make Mario have Shade. Like a. I would give him one of his outfits would be a Viking hat. He would have a Viking helmet.
Oh, I could see that.
Because there was this meat bun T-shirt that was Mario as a Viking riding on Yoshi, who was a dragon, and it was really awesome, and I wanted it, but they were sold out of the size that would have fit me. So I never got it.
I could see Mario wearing a goofy, oversized Viking hat.
Yeah, the Mario Viking shirt, man. It was awesome. But yeah, I would like Mario wearing a Viking hat, and he could, like, kind of like Wario had a Viking helmet.
Yeah, in Wario Land, Super Mario
Land.
Yeah.
I would actually put Bubsy on all fours and make him look like a cat.
Oh, that's weird.
Like, that could actually be, like, I might play Bubsy if he came back, but he was, like, a normal-looking cat with a T-shirt on.
That's an even closer encounter of the furred kind.
I would replace all of the characters in Star Fox with all the characters from Trevor McFur in Crescent Galaxy.
Yeah.
How clause is that encounter of the furred kind?
Indeed.
That's a pretty clause shave, yeah. That wraps it up for character redesigns.
All right.
Let's go on to our lightning round.
Yeah, let's do it.
Should I say our crightening round?
Oh, crightening round.
Crightening round!
Excellent.
I am going to give you the name of a short story written by Michael Crichton.
Whoa!
Yeah, not the books, because you may have prepared for the books.
I didn't prepare for anything. But
and just based on the title of the short story alone, you need to come up with a premise for a video game.
Let's do it.
We will begin Johnny at 8:30.
Johnny at 8:30. Johnny
it's a Jekyll and Hyde game.
Yeah.
You're Steve during the day, but as soon as 8:30 hits, you become Johnny, and you have to balance between the two girlfriends that they both have who don't know that they live that they're in a relationship with a shape-shifting, identity-changing man.
Wait, does each of them have two girlfriends? That's four girlfriends total.
That's not what I meant to do, but you know why not?
All right. Next game. Well, nothing.
Well, nothing.
It's about a well that babies keep falling into, and so you're an explorer who's like, I'm going to go down that well, and you go down there, and it's just, there's just nothing down there, and you go on a mysterious adventure to find out what happened to the babies.
Ooh. I'm on board with that too.
Life goes to a party.
Oh man,
the party. So it's you play like some kind of angel of life. And then you go to a party, and the angel of death is there, and you're like, "Oh my god, this is so awkward." And you have to figure out how to have conversations with as many people as possible while, like, avoiding the angel of death because you really don't want to have a conversation, but you just got to this party, so you don't feel like you can leave.
Yeah,
so it's a conversation game.
I feel like you could do that with just like Steve and Johnny, though. Like, there's nothing that really makes it about life and death.
Except that it's... Well, maybe the angel of death is slowly killing everyone at the party and you have to revive them.
Why slowly? Oh, yeah.
One after another is what I mean by slowly.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Methodically.
Yeah, methodically. That's the one. Yeah.
Oh, good old methodical death.
The most important part of the lab.
it's a first-person shooter where you're like a soldier who's got to defend the lab from the type of FPS players who kill the scientists.
But because you're a soldier, you give in to whatever orders you're given.
Hello.
Uh-oh, that's no more Frank.
No more Frank.
It looks like Frank's dead. That's okay. So there's a more important part of the lab. Who you're supposed to defend the whole lab, but there's a most important part, and you're not told what it is because it's all kept confidential. So you just have to sort of look at the lab and figure it out. And just every once in a while, one of the scientists will. It's just a huge lab full of hundreds of scientists, and every once in a while, one of the scientists. Tries to destroy the lab because there are just like hundreds of spies in the lab.
Right.
How's that? Watch their movements and figure out which ones are spies and which part of the lab is the most important.
I like that.
The thing I was thinking just real quick is that you got a lab and there's a part of the lab where these mysterious creatures are growing and it turns out they're growing at an exponential rate and you've got to try to figure out a way to contain them, kind of Trouble with Tribbles style. Keep them in there in that most important part of the lab.
More like the Tribbles with Troubles.
Yeah.
Sure. Villa of Assassins.
Oh.
Villa of Assassins?
Yes.
It's just a whole bunch of dudes just chilling out, and they're in a villa.
Yeah.
And every once in a while, one of them... Oh, and they've all received orders to kill all of the other assassins.
Yeah.
They're trying to keep it secret. So it's like it's like Spy Party, except just way more systematically complex.
Oh, wow. How does that make you feel?
It's just a game that keeps asking you... It's basically just like a BioShock Big Daddy boss rush, where you're fighting every Big Daddy in a row, and then after... You know, it just ends up, and the little sister is left afterward, and you're asked if you want to save her or not. And every once in a while, if you choose to save the little sister, your guy will still kill her, and then the game will just ask you, "How does that make you feel?" And that's it, just over and over again. It's like a survival.
I was
going to
say it's like a David Cage game, and every few minutes, David Cage just walks on screen and asks you how that made you feel, and you have to
answer. All right, let's talk about this. He pulls out a chair and turns it back. Let's wrap up what just happened.
Meanwhile, I was thinking it would just be Milo. Like, they just finish Milo.
Yeah.
They finish Milo and, there you go.
And then
go.
Peter Molyneux. Peter Molyneux is who is a better example. It's who I
And instead of being a long-form, cinematic, story-driven adventure game, it's just kind of like a survival game where... Milo's just asking you questions constantly, and
it's
he's like
a survival psychiatry game.
Yeah, it's like a survival psychiatry game, but it's really fast paced to be like, "What should I eat for lunch? Should I have a sandwich or should I have some eggs and tomatoes?" And you like choose one of those things, and just randomly, one of those things will kill him. It's like Bonky Trek. You know Bonky Trek, where you just don't really know? And just one of the choices will always kill Milo. And it's like... And then Peter Molyneux comes in and he's like, "That's why you don't eat eggs and tomatoes." Like, that's it. And it's like, what? It's like he eats it, and he eats the eggs, and there's a razor blade in them. And then he chokes, and he just throws up blood and dies.
Oh my god,
grisly death.
I am not exaggerating when I say that my plan right at the conclusion of this broadcast was to eat eggs and tomatoes for dinner. That
oh, baby.
Well, now you know not to do that.
It's probably because those are two foods that are on my list of things that are okay to eat, and we have a similar list of foods that are okay to eat. So
it's true. Right. Yeah.
So there you have
the Death Divers.
The Death Divers.
Oh man. You have to dive into the River Styx to retrieve lost souls.
Maybe? Okay, so here it is. In the future, in the year 2196, murder is legalized, but only if it's done... No, only if it's done from a person who has not touched the ground in more than 2 minutes.
Okay.
So you, in order to kill someone, you have to skydive out of the air and land on them.
Skydiving murders.
Yeah, land on them with like knives on the bottom of your feet.
Oh, I love it.
So it's like Super Mario stomping from like 30,000 feet up.
Tim, you basically described my dream game. Much more violent than I pictured it, but you know what? I'm cool with that.
The Death Divers.
The most powerful tailor in the world.
Oh.
It's about Jonathan Taylor Thomas. No,
yeah.
Oh, JTT. He would
so
have
a tailor would fight with, what, needles? Like you'd have
Tim the Toolman Taylor. Yeah.
You have scissors and needles, right?
No, no, okay, here's what I think it would be.
And a tape measure. He'd swing with a tape measure.
No, I think it's a guy who makes armor for guys in games, and he makes all your power-up suits and things like that.
Bulletproof vests and all that.
Yeah, so you've got like a horde of adventurers coming toward you, and you make them things with materials they bring, and then you see their quests happening elsewhere on the screen. I would like to play that game personally.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. Mousetrap, A Tale of Computer Crime.
Whoa! It's a game about mice.
Okay, it's a game about mice who live in a cartoon mouse hole in a vintage computer shop. By vintage, I mean it's a time period in the 80s. They have to sneak out past the cat to steal floppies that they'll copy.
Oh,
don't
no!
Copy that floppy.
Yeah.
DCTF.
Finally, Blood Doesn't Come Out.
Blood Doesn't Come Out. It's yeah. about you're just like, okay, so it's one of those surgeon simulator games.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
But it's just on. It's an autopsy simulator on bodies whose blood has all kind of congealed and
ooh,
livid blood that is livid, as they say.
It's kind of a detective game.
I learned the phrase lividity of blood, meaning the blood has pooled in the bottoms of the body, like the body's lying on its back, the blood pools in the bottoms of the arms. I learned that from a Michael Crichton short story when I was a young person.
Was it Blood Doesn't Come Out?
I don't think it was Blood Doesn't Come Out, but it's an autopsy game where you can stab the people and they just don't bleed.
Yeah, I think like a forensic science thing. You're trying to figure out what killed these people.
Yeah, I'd have a good time with an adventure game, sort of point-and-click sort of game that is also somewhat of a Phoenix Wright game that is about autopsy. And Blood Doesn't Come Out could be the stylish name of this actual not-jokey game idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that.
Well, even though Frank and Tim both did well in this round, I'm giving the game to Brandon because he pieced together the arcade challenge for the first time. So be prepared to bring in the first question next
Wait,
week.
Wait, didn't I also do it the first arcade? Didn't I get that one too?
That was the one that I presented.
Yeah, that's one Tim did.
Oh, you did that one?
Yeah. I actually designed my arcade challenge to be very solvable.
Oh, it was the one that you did, right? Yes, okay, I remember.
Yeah,
yes.
I predicted it would be solved in about 6 minutes, and that's how long it took.
Honk.
Nice.
So that's what we call level design.
Mm-hmm.
Jaffy's are more of Doom level designs or Wolfenstein level designs, but that's okay. Those are fun.
Thanks, Tim. You can send your questions in to and your comments about how I'm using this show to advance my own personal sinister means to podcast at insertcredit.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Alex Jaffe. Tim's at 108. Frank's at Frank Cifaldi. Cifaldi is spelled C-I-F-A-L-D-I. True. And Brandon's at Necrosofty. It's not P-I-E, it's T-Y. Tim has a stream that I want to plug.
Oh,
that
yeah.
He does on Saturday nights. He did it last week, and we're going to do it again this upcoming Saturday night, where Tim's playing through one of my favorite games of the last console generation, Lost Odyssey. We've talked about it a little bit on the show. We've mentioned how it's better than Final Fantasy VII. Come on by, and we'll prove it to you.
So it's, I'm actually having a really good time with it. I played it for about 5 hours last week, and you can actually go watch it right now on twitch.tv/actionbutton. If you click on videos, you can see it's one of the recent... I was sure to archive it right after I made it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a really good time with it because I find that I have a lot of stuff to say, and I've played a lot of 16-bit Japanese RPGs over the last half of my life. So I feel like, God, more than half, I guess... Since the original Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy, I've been playing them, so that's got a ridiculously large percentage of my life. And I'm playing this game, and I find myself with a lot of critical things to say about it. And it's really fun, because I think it's actually an entertaining adult-like video game. And I'm aiming to be respectful of it in the playing. And I'm criticizing the stuff I don't like, but I'm being respectful and not being mean or jokey at all, which is weird because that turned out to get me way more viewers than my streams where I'm mean and jokey. So,
and that goes against common internet logic also. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I remember Frank, when we were playing a game and we got like 100 people telling us to, or not 100, but it was like 10 people telling us to stop reading the text off the screen.
Yeah.
Remember? They're like, that's the worst thing for a stream is when people read the text off the screen. Well, yep. One of the foundational principles of my Lost Odyssey stream is that whenever I encounter one of the short stories in the game, which are written by Kiyoshi Shigematsu and translated by Jay Rubin, and they're like these actual little literary short stories. They're like these short stories. Whenever I get to one of those, I have vowed that I will read the entire story out loud dramatically on the stream, and I didn't lose viewers during any of those. So
no, that was great.
Yeah, so that goes against the conventional wisdom as well. So,
Brandon and Frank, anything you'd like to alert our listeners to?
Well, I've been streaming stuff too in a different way than Tim, a little bit. I guess not that different. I'm just mostly playing through old weird games that I like, PC Engine games, Saturn games, that kind of stuff. On original hardware and mm-hmm. things. So that's twitch.tv/necrosoftgames if you decide that you want to ever look at those. I got some stuff.
And I'm in the early planning stages of doing something video game preservation-y that might be a Patreon or something similar. Because it'd be kind of cool if people were into the stuff enough to pay my monthly bills that I pay to do the stuff by myself. So if you like game preservation and you could spare a few bucks a month, you just watch out for the stuff I'm going to do soon.
Oh,
I just want to point out that I'm playing Lost Odyssey on the original hardware as well.
All right. Speaking of crowdsourcing, I think there's an important thing that we should talk about briefly. A dear member of our little community has been.
Community.
Yeah, has been having some medical troubles. You know about this.
Brandon Boyer.
Yeah, exactly. Brandon
Boyer. B-boy. I know that guy.
So, Brandon Boyer's been dealing with some pretty ridiculous medical expenses, and he's given a lot to this independent video games community in which we all sometimes find ourselves. And I'll drop a link to where you could help out in the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/ICpodcast.
You can go to the Humble Bundle and get that new Humble Bundle. It's what is it, like humblebundle.com/devolver, because Devolver Digital has a Humble Bundle that includes one of just humblebundle.com/devolver. If you go there, there's a list of these Devolver Digital games that you can buy, which includes if you pledge more than $10, and you can choose how your pledge gets broken down. You can choose to give all of it to Brandon Boyer if you want, or you can give a little bit to Devolver or whatever. But if you buy that bundle, you get Mark Echo's Getting Up, Contents Under Pressure for Steam. And I dare say that is one of the best underrated games of the PlayStation 2, Xbox generation. It's very, very interesting. I would like to say it is an insert credit worthy game that insert credit should like, but I don't know if Brandon or Frank have ever played it.
I have not.
I was not paying attention.
Oh, the game Mark Echo's Getting Up, Contents Under Pressure.
Oh, I have it on my Xbox.
Oh, well, it's part of a Humble Bundle that Devolver is doing for Brandon Boyer, and it's a really good game, and I guess that's a pretty good reason to buy that game, isn't it? It's basically, if you need me to sell it to you, people of the internet, it is Jet Set Radio, the Hollywood movie adaptation, the video game. And it has a really good, interesting combat system. The combat mechanics are really good and clean. It has a genuinely neat user interface. It takes place in an inventive world. It is a kind of a dystopian science fiction future where graffiti is illegal and the cops are just killing graffiti artists. It's weird. It's neat. I really like it. So there's that.
All
nice
right.
level design too.
A whole lot of games you get for $10 too.
Yeah, you're looking at that. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of them. And you can pay more than $10 if you want.
Yeah,
and, besides Brandon being a dear friend of ours and needing help and everything, I found that the share buttons on his GoFundMe page, it's a really interesting study in trends. 3,900 tweets, 1,100 Facebook shares, 33 Google Plus shares, and 5 LinkedIn shares.
Oh, that is interesting. That is, in fact, quite interesting.
And 0 Pinterest pins.
Oh, man.
That means women hate Brandon Boyer.
Oh, no. I mean, that isn't the kind of thing you'd pin to Pinterest. You normally want to pin stuff to Pinterest that's, like, really happy looking, right?
Yeah.
All right. Let's
like a new hat or some flowers.
Let's wrap this up. I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Cipaldi.
I'm Tim Rogers.
I'm Brandon Sheffield.
And not before, but now, you're playing with podcasts.
Podcast over, yeah!